Reading from the Priya Bhagavatamrita, Part 1, Chapter 5, Text 97.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yatvatam yadavo vyetya dandvanta samgamakula utapya prasabam panel dvitva ninyu sabantaram.
As soon as the yadus learned that Narada had arrived, they came out running. Out in a flurry, they quickly raised him from the ground, took him by his hands, and led him to the assembly hall.
Om Gyanatimarandasya Gyanandana Talakaya Taksur Unmulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruvaye Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Napitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Padati Sapadantikam Paragyayud Bhakti Risham Payatnai Ayama Manavipsamandam Pambuya Paraduka Dugi Sanatanastam Prabhamatsuyami Vancha Kopa Tarubhyascha Kripa Shindu Baye Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Namo Hare Namo Rama Rama Hare Hare.
So greetings from Vrindavan. I think I have one more Sunday class from Vrindavan. And it's hard to leave Vrindavan because Vrindavan binds the people who live here with a certain attachment because it's so nourishing to spiritual life. To be in a place that's just so soaked, imbued with Krishna consciousness, from people to places. I just went out today to Ter Kadamba, probably the most beautiful place in Braj. And I didn't have to perform, I didn't have to take out a large group, just went with a few people who requested that I take them out. We just sat there and we did kirtan, a little kirtan, chanted, came back, gave my class, went to Ayendra's kirtan, and that temple was rocking, to say the least. Got back here a little bit late. Now, I can't say I'm struggling with the sections, but a lot of themes now are kind of repeated. And I thought about that, you know, how the purpose of repetition, and one, it's to strengthen important points. have to be heard again and again. And in terms of the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, which is Rasa Shastra, it's love, it's devotion. Every word is a devotion by whoever speaks. It's a level of relish. You don't have to be intellectually stimulated all the time. And there's different ways of dealing with Shastra. First, to get an understanding and conviction. And at another level, Shastra is read as a relationship with Krishna. It's an experience. I remember when I was teaching the first and second cantos to James, that very excellent student that I had traveling with me. And he was a very good student. I would prepare, and I would try very carefully to explain things. But what happened is when you enter into the Bhagavatam and you understand the message and you can explain the message is a person. The message is Krishna. So it goes beyond a intellectual experience. Experiential rather than intellectual. There's something that happens in that level of communication where there's an experience. It's like when you chant japa. One way to chant japa mantras is to envision the mantra as Krishna and to try to feel it from the heart. Because we are part of Krishna, we have a natural loving relationship with Krishna, and the force or symptom of a loving relationship is love or attraction. So by chanting japa and absorbing oneself in the mantra, it's almost like a magnet, and the heart is like a piece of metal or iron filings. There's an attraction. And that attraction that comes out is your soul. That is your soul, because the nature of the soul is to love God. So it's the same thing with the Shastra. It is Krishna. And by engaging with it, it will have an attractive influence on your heart. So I think we'll get some new points too. It's now we're at Narada's view of the Pandavas, and it's a description of their opulence, and a description of their opulence is also rasa or devotion. Because they accepted their opulence to give Krishna pleasure. Just like Srimati Radharani, she may put on a jewel, and she may have a very, very attractive necklace. But that necklace is worn for the pleasure of Krishna, and therefore the necklace itself is love of Krishna. And therefore the necklace is actually different than Radharani, because Srimati Radharani is Mahabhav Sarup. She is the embodiment of the conception that Krishna should be pleased. That's what Shakti or energy is, and she's the point of Shakti. Shakti is to please the source of that energy. Except, in a spiritual sense, that energy is not only serving its source,
It has the intention to serve or please the source. And therefore, the essence of energy is Ladini Shakti, or pleasure, potency, or love. So this is love. It's opulence. But it's opulence to give Krishna pleasure. One of the five types of liberation is to have a body like Krishna. What does that have to do with bhakti? Because it's a pleasure for Krishna to be with beautiful people. When that beauty is with the created with the intention of pleasing him. So it's describing the opulence and how the Pandav, the Yadus who are kings, they're regaled by song and dance, they're praised by bards and tasteful way. We get a sense of this city where Krishna lives. That it's very, very opulent. But it's an opulence that's born of the pleasure of Krishna. Just like if you make a room nice for someone, then the decorations are for the pleasure. So Krishna, naturally, he has a loving environment that's beautiful, so his whole city is beautiful, and he's the king, all his people are beautiful, but it's intentional. So all perfections of the world and kingdom of God attended God, attended Krishna in Dwarka like menial servants. So there's a reverence to that opulence, a reverential love. And the residents described it very radiant. But the radiance is gentle and pleasing, and thus does not pain the eyes like if you looked into the sun. And there's so much happiness there and vigor there that even the elderly appear youthful. An elderly person who is youthful is very attractive. I think many of the people that are listening to this have met my mother, my 89-year-old mother, and she's youthful in appearance, strikingly so for a person who's 89, and it's pleasing and it's attractive. So the old people, even in Dwarka, are pure youthful. But despite all this opulence that the Yadus have, they're simply waiting. They're simply waiting to see Krishna. And he's their only object of worship. And they can care less. They could care less with their soul, their material power. Or it was, even though they had it, what they wanted is to see Krishna. And therefore they're waiting with great eagerness. Eagerness and enthusiasm is the sign of devotion. Eagerness to serve and eagerness to be with. It's a very beautiful thing. Success of any spiritual mission is the hearts of the people in that mission and their peace and love of others within that mission. Otherwise, what's the difference between the mission and the material world? Perhaps told you, I don't know if I told you or not, but I can repeat it. I have one friend Maybe I didn't say it, actually. I went to the Samadhi. Kastubhu is here, so I was with him. He just came. We went to see the deities. Let's go see Prabhupada. I'm standing in there. And I see, you may have saw in my greetings from Vrindavan, I talked about meeting this forest sage, Yadu. It's one of the stories in my book. And he's really like a forest sage. He's an amazing person. So I see him in front of Prabhupada Samadhi praying. And he sees me and he comes over. And you never can tell when you see him because he travels all over India. And, you know, maybe in the VIHE, it was actually 20 years ago, maybe when the VIHE started, he was in my Bhagavad Gita class, and I had noticed when I was teaching Bhagavad Gita that this person, as I was teaching the class, he memorized every single English verse and every single Sanskrit verse, the Bhagavad Gita, and then he was memorizing the purport. So naturally, he just come to Vrindavan, and I engaged him as a teacher. He began to study Sanskrit. And then, you know, I thought he was going to go back to the West to preach, but he says, I'm going to stay in India for 5 years and learn Sanskrit. So it sounds like... It sounded like such a long time to me. So after 5 years, I thought he was going to go back, and he said, now I'm going to study I'm forgetting what the relation of this story is to my point, but I'm going to continue the story. Maybe it'll come out. But the story will have interest independently of what I'm talking about. So he says, now I'm going to study, you know, how to chant all the verses of Bhagavatam and study all the commentaries. So he did that for another 5 years, and then I met him. I thought he was going to go back. He says, no, my studies are not finished. I'm going to learn spoken Sanskrit. So he went with Pandits and learned to speak Sanskrit. Then when I met him, then he said, I think I should also learn Hindi. And he wandered around and went to villages and lived with teachers and became fluent in Hindi. Then he decided to learn astrology. Then he learned Sangeet, music. And he became an incredibly proficient scholar in the Bhagavatam and Sanskrit. I mean, top. And he, you know, if you see him, he looks like what you envision Rupa Goswami would look like. And then he studied Sangeet, music, and then astrology. Then he went to Hardwar and studied yoga. And then he studied Bengali. And then he read the Chaitanya Charitamrita in the original, and then I saw him there. And he told me, you know, now I've studied for 20 years. And I'm only focused on one line in the Bhagavad Gita. I forgot which verse it is, but basically it means that if you put your mind on me, you'll realize me. So he started telling me that he's just chanting all day. And I said, well, I'd like to keep in touch with you. He says, I don't have any email. I said, well, give me your phone. He says, I don't have any phone. Okay, 1 second. Can everybody still hear me? Hello? Can people hear me? Hi, bro?
Sorry, bro.
No problem. We can hear you, Marsh. No problem.
Okay, good. Okay, thank you. So, I mean, it was just speaking to him, and I just realized that he's basically just chanting all day, kind of. So I said, okay, you know, I know where he stays. Also, I'll come see you tomorrow. So I was knocking on the door. No one answered. Then I kind of yelled, and then maybe he heard me, and he came. He's very respectful in culture. So immediately, because I taught him Bhagavad Gita, he respects me as his guru or teacher-like. That's the way he is. I mean, he's cultured. So he sat me on a chair, put something in 5 feet. And it was just nice. Like, you know, it was very, very inspirational. You can see how inspirational when someone is dedicated like that. And then, you know, he was telling me on a codicil, he said actually he does Mona Vrata, but he only spoke because he saw me, because it was a codicil. And, you know, he told me on a codicil, he doesn't write, but he doesn't have phone. He doesn't answer letters. Any contact has to be personal. And he said, and then there's Mona Vrata. I don't speak, he said. So, you know, there is nothing else to do. In other words, he organized his life on a codicil. There is nothing else he's allowed to do. What do you do when you don't talk? When you don't write? I'm not sure if he reads, but probably not. So basically, Chaney told me you get a lot of realization by that. And now it's interesting, he's going back to his country in Central America for 15 years. He won't come back to India for 15 years. Oh, yeah, so here's the point. And he told me, so he said there's a little, you know, community, whatever it is. And I asked him, what are you going to do? He says, I'm just going to explain to people that if you want to attract people to Krishna consciousness, you have to be at peace with others, and you have to be at peace with yourself. So, anyway, I had a lot of realizations from meeting him. I was thinking at the time, you know, so much work, so much, you know. But I thought maybe more of us should have took 20 years off. Because you can imagine if he goes back, he's a gentleman. And he's chanting the holy name all day long. And, you know, of course, meeting people. I mean, just like when I came, he stopped what he was doing. He was very respectful and attentive with me. So, I mean, he will relate, but how powerful it will be. But I guess I was relating that to Dwarka, that although people, they wanted nothing but to see Krishna and be with him, and how attractive that is individually, and how attractive that is collectively. So that's Dwarka, that's the spiritual world. And that's what we're actually seeing here. Countless millions of Yadavas waited, absorbed to talk about Krishna, their minds and eyes anxiously focused on the path from Krishna's inner palace. Commentary, just as anyone who feels at ease talks about what is on his mind, the Yadavas naturally discuss Krishna, the pastimes he had performed on various occasions, and also the business at hand with him in the royal assembly. The Yadavas had no inclination to talk or think about anything not involving Krishna. That's the happy or sad fact of life, depending on the way you look about it. Spiritual advancement means eagerness to hear about Krishna and chant. That's the symptom of love. When Jagannanda Pandit was sent by Lord Chaitanya to bring some prasad and to comfort Mother Sachi, they never slept at night. They just had katha about Lord Chaitanya. And Mother Satchitani, she didn't sleep. That's because of her love. And Jagannanda Pandit didn't need her sleep because of his love. That's how there are people, I know people in Vrindavan on Ekadasi. They don't drink, they don't eat, and they stay up all night. You have to be advanced. But when you love someone, there's nothing more you like than to talk about them and to hear about them. That's why when someone becomes infatuated and falls in love, it's very hard for them to hide it because they talk about that person. And they don't realize that they're exposing their heart by doing so. So, it's just nice, the spiritual world. So, now Narada, this verse, as soon as the Yadus learned that Narada had arrived, they came running out in a flurry. They quickly raised him from the ground, took him by his hands, and led him to the assembly hall. Mahadivyasane date upavishtam tarikshaya pumau vevo praveshyamun paritas vayam apita. They offered him a large heavenly seat, but he refused to sit on it. Yielding to his desire, they gave him a place to sit on the ground, and they all sat around him. So Narada is a very humble soul. He does not seek elevation above others. Maybe it has to be accepted. It always reminds me when that one Acharya, one of the 11 zonal Acharyas, was getting huge palaces, European palaces. Skyscraper Vyasasans. And when they consulted one sadhu in Vrindavan, they were concerned about him. They said, if he's attached to sitting on the seat, will he fall? I love the sadhu's answer. The sadhu said he's already fallen. Because that's what fallen means. It's not just an action, it's a consciousness. And what's the consciousness? It's material consciousness, which is what? The desire to control and enjoy. The desire to be superior to others. That's why the position of guru has proven to be dangerous for many. If they weren't sufficiently detached, they began to enjoy the large heavenly seat, as opposed to Narada Muni, who was repulsed by it. Devarshi pravaromidhi puja dravyam samabritam atva sanjalya utaya vanita muha ahatam. When they brought paraphernalia for worship, the chief sage among the gods bowed his head to it with folded hands. He then stood up and humbly spoke to them at length. So they brought paraphernalia for worship. He just offered it respect. And then he began to speak. And when he began to speak, they were glorifying him, but they were doing it paracharya by offering a very kingly opulence, and now they offer him the paraphernalia, he just bows to it, and he begins to glorify them. Because by hearing about them, he developed devotion for them. Srinarada Uvacha. Bo Krishna Padabja Mahanukampita Lokotaramam Aduna Dayadvam Yushmakameva Vritam Yataham Kirtim Padayam Sagati Brahmayam. Sri Narada said, O greatest receivers of the mercy of Krishna's lotus feet, you are all transcendental persons. Today, please be merciful to me. Please bless me that I may wander always throughout the universe, constantly singing your glories. So, this is what he was looking for again. Maha Nukampita, the great recipients of mercy. Because again, this is just to remind you what that meant. He's wandering. He's looking. He's searching. And he sets the example for us. What we should search for is people of God's mercy. And people who have God's mercy they have God's love. And as Krishna's responsive, it means that they love Krishna. In other words, they have intimate love for Krishna. And that's what he's searching for. Because what is spiritual advancement? Spiritual advancement is a condition of the heart. The more selfless and loving you are, the more advanced. Not the more sense-controlled you are, the more you're advanced. Although that could be a symptom of your love for Krishna, like the six Goswamis, that they love Krishna so much that they rejected anything that couldn't be used in Krishna's service. So it is a symptom. It's a symptom. But the real love, the real symptom of advancement is the desire to please God and the devotion and the mood of devotion. It's the heart. It's the one's humility. It's one's tolerance. It's one's devotion. Hiranyakashipu was very austere, but he was a demon. So, and Narada wants the blessing to constantly sing their glories. Indeed, this family of Yadus is most praiseworthy. You are more radiant than the residents of Vaikuntha. By your grace, this world of men is surpassed Vaikuntha and attain supreme glory. So surpassing Vaikuntha, even though they're in the mortal realm, they're on this earth planet, it became more splendorous than Vaikuntha. So Narada is surprised that their character and opulence is shlagya tamam, most praiseworthy. Even Chakasti, more radiant than Vaikuntha Nivasita, than the residents of Vaikuntha. So they are glorifying them. Vitatri-tri-bhavati safala-payasa yasyam chanur vasitakeli chaya kilaisham yesham mahari ayam vivasa kihasu kutrapi purvam akutai Amate Vihare. Most fortunate Mother Earth, by your fruitful endeavors, these Yadus have manifest upon your surface their birth, residence, and pleasing act. the Supreme Lord Hari resides in their homes and enjoys with them unprecedented transcendental pastimes. So this is the most auspicious ground that supports the most love. Everyone values love. Sometimes when I go to Govardhan, I will be going to Govardhan tomorrow. This appearance, Titi Bhav, Tira Bhav Mahotsa of Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And I'll visit his Pushpa Samadhi. And participate in the program there. When I go to Govardhan, I speak about, because I'm having a lot of people who are just yogis, yoginis that are coming. Hear all the time, and often here I have responsibility for two or three different sets of people. Sometimes I take people who are not devotees to Govardhan and to explain it to him. I have a way of explaining it. But because it describes an Upadesh Shamrita, that there's a gradation of space, that higher than the material worlds is Vaikuntha, and higher than Vaikuntha is Mathura Mandala, and higher than that is the forest of Vrindavan, and higher than that is Govardhan Hill, and then Govardhan Hill Radhakund. The question is, what makes one space higher than another? And if you ask people that, what makes the living room better than the office, ultimately they'll easily come to the conclusion that we cherish or value a particular space by the facility it offers to exchange more and more intimate love. Generally, people like their living room better than the office because the office facilitates, at best, even if you're the boss, a reverential love, which is very distant, and even if you love who you work for, it's still distant and there's still obligation and duty in it, and the setting is very formal. With a living room, there's couches, there's recreation, there's pictures, everything, music, everything is to inspire a more intimate love, which is more enjoyable. So, space is valued by its facility to host relationships. You can think of a space that you like and why. So, Mother Earth naturally is being glorified because she is the ground where these pastimes that are even more intimate than Vaikuntha are taking place. So how wonderful. Now the verse which I wanted to speak on and which had the philosophical content that interested me, we're coming to now, but I feel better to stop for questions. Are there any questions?
Maharaj?
Yeah.
It's Mooney. I kind of waited for a few seconds because I feel like I've been jumping in early lately. I can wait a little bit more and allow someone else a chance and come in later if you'd like. I said that I waited a few seconds.
Sorry? Please ask your question.
It's okay.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a question about what you had just said about the hierarchy of places and how that relates to the ability of a place to facilitate love. Do you hear me okay right now? Do you hear me okay or no?
I do, but it seems like you're on a speaker.
Okay, I had my hands free and I just took it out. So one thing that struck me when I was listening to you is that there seem to be instances where people value a space for, there's a couple other reasons that struck me, and I wanted to know if it fits in with your picture or if it maybe adds to it in some other way. So first of all, it seems like there's places that people value just because they're beautiful. So, you know, someone might remember going to the Grand Canyon or something because it just struck them with a certain kind of beauty or majesty. And there's other cases where people may love a place because it's just peaceful. It may not really remind them of a relationship with another person, but people like to go to the woods and things like that because they get away from the bustle and it's peaceful. And so I wonder, the final thing is sometimes people love a place because it's nostalgic and it reminds them of something in the past. So would you say that in each case this has to do with reciprocating love, or do you think maybe these somehow just kind of add to that picture in some way or make it more robust?
Well, pleasure is... Well, there's also Shanta Ras, you know.
That's true.
Kind of appreciation of God, etc. But I think that it generally pleasure is what? It's some love. Even Shanta Ras is appreciation. You know? I doubt, you know, if one's just going to a place purely, you know, because it strokes the ego or something, you know, there has to be something in the heart that it awakens for one to enjoy the place, you know, really enjoy the place, you know. Some sense of harmony, you know, there's something greater than me, you know, something, you know. I mean, even, I guess you could, you know, say like an atheist, you know, can just appreciate beauty, you know. But I wonder what's behind that ultimate sentiment also, you know. If there's not something in relationship with the soul and something outside that's being invoked by that. But I was also specifically talking about, you know, the spaces that you personally construct. You know, places that you personally construct, it seems that the value in it is because of that. You know. I'm not sure yet I've answered your question personally.
No, well, I think that you've pointed out a really nice way to... excuse me, Marge, I just have to clear my throat, forgive me. Sorry. It seems to me that what you're saying, and I thought it was really insightful, that, you know, there's cases where people may think they're just undergoing an emotion where they're alone, you know, because I don't want to deploy, like, jargon, but when I think, you know, love is often a transitive relationship. It requires another person. So there's two people, and there's the act of loving. And I was thinking about the fact that in some of these places that I was describing, it would seem like it's not a transitive relationship. It seems like the person is just experiencing awe or peacefulness. And in that case, you might think that it's just them and their feeling. But I think the point you made, which I thought, again, it was very insightful, is that even in this case, it's transitive. They may not realize it's actually directed towards Krishna in its best cases, but it is. And so that makes a lot of sense to me, that people are often relating with Krishna without realizing it. And what is it about the greatness of the Grand Canyon or something? Well, maybe at its best, it's a little spark of Krishna splendor. Did I understand what you were saying then, or no? Is that a fair way to recap?
I know myself, going to the Himalayas, you know, it was so awe-inspiring. You know, I mean, that's the purpose of the universal form, to invoke some spirit of other devotion in your heart for God through one's natural humility and surrender to Atman. You know, that's the whole purpose of the universal form. You meditate on opulence, and it brings out your soul. Because the first aspect of the soul is that I'm not everything, I'm part of something, and I'm part of something greater. And that sense of humility is the first spark of understanding one's nature. To take the others, I'm just thinking, but there are other types of presence. Just like the whole yoga thing, one imbibes in one's own nature. But that one really... You know, even Professor Bryant, as I'm teaching the Yoga Sutras, he says, you know, it really doesn't say anything. Although he appears to be theistic, he doesn't say anything about the soul's relationship to God and perfection, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of strange after mentioning God. So it's almost like trying to get somewhere, someplace, by a material formula. And then you get to the place and you experience it. They don't have, you know, in yoga, you don't have to explain what the place is. You know what I'm saying? You just explain what it's not, and then it's kind of reductionist. You get rid of the mind, and then you're stuck with the soul. Anyway, what is the soul? When you get there, you'll find out. What is its relationship with God? When you get there, you'll find out, you know? Mm. By definition, because they're trying to negate the mind, they really can't describe it. So... Anyway, it's worth a thought. I'm trying to also think, are there limitations to my analogy, you know? It's certainly true. Maybe it's not the only reason, but it's certainly one of the main reasons. It may be the only reason, but it's certainly one of the main reasons why you enjoy a place is the facility it gives you. You know, one, it could be the facility to enjoy, you know. These are my desires. Yeah. My desires are fulfilled in the place. But, you know, certainly one criteria of one space being better than another, you know. I put it this way, in the realm of love, in the realm of relationship, which is certainly dominant and prominent in terms of enjoyment, the gradation of space is based on the facility space gives you to enjoy that love. There are other reasons, there may be impersonal reasons, you know, there is no relationship, all is one, you know, shanti, it's peaceful. We can reduce that and then find out what's the, you know, the psychology beyond that. Or just, you know, someone's got a game room. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And they got all frivolous games in the room, and they love it, you know? But that doesn't say very much about the person. Okay, any other questions, Tony? It's Tony.
I do, but, excuse me. I think what you're saying ties in nicely to the point you were making about Yadu, that it seemed to me that part of what Yadu by the way, I don't even know if that's who you were talking about. That just came out. I don't even know if you mentioned his name, so I'm sorry. That great scholar. He seemed to recognize that practicing Krishna consciousness it takes place within a culture. And he was saying, you know, you have to be at peace with what you are. And it seems like he was. He did something which actually kind of was courageous, because I'm sure a lot of devotees told him, you're wasting your time. You should be preaching. But he recognized his nature and he kind of developed it in the right culture. So it seems to me things like spaces or houses and things like that, they're part of the culture that facilitates our bhakti. And I appreciated how this idea of location ties into the fact that bhakti doesn't take place in a void. It has to be nurtured. And anyway, sorry, I'm just making these connections in my mind, and maybe.
Yeah. Sorry. Right. It's also, you know, Vrindavan is a space. You know, I mean, even now, I mean, Vrindavan is really being ravaged by, I don't know, you know, they're fixing, they're making a sewage system the way Indian does. You just break up any roads. You know, so all the roads are kind of broken. People say they'll finally get better. I don't know how India works, you know. But I'm saying, despite that, and sometimes the noise pollution and everything, the quality of people that I'm meeting, you know, is just so nourishing. So, I, you know, I guess that's the, you know, definitely places are important for us. I mean, Vrindavan, or even Radharani can't enjoy Krishna unless he's in Vrindavan. She needs space for the love, you know? She needs the space for her type of relationship. So how important is space in our tradition, you know? And the other point about my friend, it was impressive. It was impressive, you know? I asked him, you know, how many rounds he's getting, you know, and he says, you know, in spiritual practice, you never tell your experience, you know, or how many rounds, you know, there's so many things that can come from that, including envy, but
yeah.
Kind of, you know, my brain work, I realized that he just is chanting all day, you know.
Yeah.
You know, that's after 20 years of study.
Yeah.
Oh, after 20 years of study, he says, I'm not studying anymore.
Mm.
Not studying anymore. He's just chanting, and, you know. And I thought how powerful that's going to be, a person who is in a, you know, small Latin American country, right, of that country. He'll probably, he can become a very prominent person. It's not like New York, you know? A
yeah.
person who speaks the language, very, very humble, very, very cultured. And it's an inspiration, you know? It's
absolutely.
To, you know, to take shelter of the holy name. And you know, I find also that Prabhupada's mission, it's. I think your Guru Maharaj said that too. It's almost like people advance together. But I see, you know, a lot of people getting very deep, and coming to the point where they. What I liked about it is there's no email, there's no phone. I mean, obviously for preaching and communication, yukta vairagya, you know, we don't. We only give up those things which can't be used in Krishna's service. But, you know, different people have different services, and it's certainly nice when someone is at that level where he can give up all that type of connection. And I see a lot of people when that's their delegation or inspiration with Krishna, you know, they're out of the internet, they're out of the news, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to be really satisfied with yourself. And have to be very, very careful not to get caught either. You know, with more than we need.
Mm.
You know, it's so it's inspiration in person, like no phones, no, you know, most people die, no email. So, and so what happens is you actually have time to glorify God and focus your mind on God, you know? No matter what you're doing, if you give up those things, since we spend so much time on them, you either have, you know, you have more time, and it's inspiring. Because that's ultimate happiness. It's not like someone's bored doing that all day long.
Right.
You know, there's actually some deep pleasure and reciprocation from the holy name. Deep. The holy name becomes extremely manifest. You know, and one goes beyond time. Because time isn't the time is not the present. Time's in the past, the future, really. I mean, it's a different type of time. You enter into it. It's just nice. Even in the morning here in Vrindavan, you know, I have my own way of engaging with people. So some people, my book is quite popular, and some people came to ask me questions about chanting. Such nice people. I said, look, okay, because I'm getting up very early, you know, so I said, before I do my puja, you can come and sit and bhakti, we'll chant for an hour. So people come in and chant, and I give them little meditations. And, you know, it really helps them. We become focused, so people have an interest. Oh, and my interest, kirtan this evening was just, wow, it was phenomenal, actually. I mean, it's such a unique style, too. It's something. And another just interesting thing, I just got a letter from Akinchana Krishna, and he's coming on the 17th. He did kirtan. He did kirtan at this one yoga studio. And I don't know how, but he's in contact, and this lady is winding up coming to Vrindavan. And I just got his letter, and he's picking her up at the airport. She's coming to Vrindavan, and I helped find her a place to stay. Anyway, this lady writes a blog for the New York Times called Ask a Yogi. Right? And she's be staying after 3 weeks doing kirtan.
Wow.
And she'll come. I have a program with new people. They come to my house for breakfast. I got this Bhakta Nick. He's a whiz. He really does things nice. And, you know, I have a little table downstairs, breakfast, and then open up doors at Vrindavan. I mean, there's a wonderful lady that came with Raghunath Sant, and Kastuba knew her. And we did this. You just open up doors, and the people that they meet, my next door neighbors, phenomenal people, just take a beautiful Radha Govinda temple. But it's nice. And Kastuba told me, just look at New York Times Yoga Kastuba. And so I looked it up, and, you know, someone asked her, where do you go to learn spiritual life? So in the New York Times, she said, well, there's this really great guy named Kastuba who has a teacher's course at the Bhagavad
Gita. All right.
And then, you know, where he teaches it. But I thought, how's that, right? How's that, that the New York Times, you know, is advertising? when has that happened before, right? You know, we hand out all these cards at the Bhagavad Gita class, you know.
Well, it's because Kastuba, so, like... Sorry, excuse me. I got excited. Sorry.
Yeah, don't get too excited.
No, it's just that he has the guts to present things the way he thinks fit, despite whatever pressure may be there, and it's worked out.
I think it's just more the overall... people can identify with... Anyway, it's just nice. I just thought it was great.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
So, person like that, I've been doing cure time. Okay, anybody else like to say hello? Thanks, Mooney.
Sure.
Great. I like that you come in on the end. I think it's good to have dialogue. Anybody else like to say hello? Hello? Who's that?
No, it was me just signing off and saying that there's a very good chance it's going to work out for me to get a job on the East Coast, so maybe we could talk about it later privately. So, thanks, Marsh.
I'll call you in 5 minutes.
Okay, all right. Thanks a lot.
Say hello.
Hi, Krishnamurti. Hi, Krishnamurti. This is Gopi Manjari from D.C.
Gopi!
Hi, Krishnamurti. Please accept my sentences.
Yeah, great to hear from you. You know, I'll be in I meant to write you. I'm going to be in Washington. Do you know about that?
When? No, when? Come in.
I think it's the weekend of the 18th. And the last
March?
Time I was there, yeah, I met this very, very nice lady came to see me, and she has this thing called the Mindfulness Center in Bethesda, Maryland.
Yeah, you told me about that.
And she's organizing a lecture for me. But
are you
going to
do anything for Serenity?
I wrote it. She never answered me back. I'm going to write you what I have so far. Okay? I'll send you a message now. Because I wrote her and she didn't answer, but it sometimes she gets busy. But it was about 2-3 weeks ago. So let me, you know, write you and you can speak to her. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I appreciate it. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. This is Janava.
Great. Hi, Bo. Isn't that exciting?
Hi,
Bo. You should look that up. You should look that up in the New York Times Yoga Kastuba. You'll see that lady's blog.
I will.
Okay, great. Thank you for nice to hear from you.
Thank you.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj, this is Eka Chakra.
Okay, do I owe you a letter or you owe me a letter about finance?
I think you owe me a
letter. Right?
Just to finalize the dates.
Okay, I'll finalize the dates. Yeah, it's just so amazingly, every day I'm, you know, out, which is not my thing so much because it's a little tiring, but
right.
It's just, you know, it's nervous now. So many nice people come to Vrindavan. One second. All right, all right, go. Keshav Bharti Maharaj? Hello? Okay. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, I'll get off of the thing. Looney, I'll call you, but I got to make a few phone calls first. I will.